And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standing, and I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. Happy Sunday night to everybody. Hope you enjoyed your college basketball watching, if you were into that, even if your brackets are surely busted with all the various upsets that have happened. Although I guess if everybody's bracket busted, then some people's, even if you're the best of the worst, still not in a bad place to be. So kudos there. If you're still in the mix of your bracket, I've been long out. But what I am long into is, of course, covering the Commanders and talking a lot about ownership. We do that today with Matt Parrish from the Washington Times. Matt and I just talked a few minutes ago, got into where are we both at right now with the ownership situation. What do we make of the constant noise about what's going on right now? A lot of people weighing in on that. And, of course, we also talked about the team 1 week into free agency. Are they better? Where are we at with the Jacoby Brissett, Sam Howell of it all? What moves are next? So we'll get to that. In addition, at the end of that conversation, my guy Bobby Bancroft joined me to talk about the other search in town, and that is the Georgetown men's basketball team. We think it's going to be Ed Cooley from Providence, but we discussed – that even if it is, what does that mean? And a bunch more. So if you're into Georgetown at the end of this conversation with Matt, you can listen in on that as well. Of course, you missed anything from last week or anytime. If you missed any of the podcasts, you can subscribe on iTunes or wherever you do your podcasting, and then you won't miss any of it. So make sure you do that. Also, make sure you're subscribing to The Athletic. It's been a busy few days for me over there. I had a couple stories over the last few days that I'll mention. One was, Matt and I did talk about it here, but essentially how, if you look at the Commanders quarterback situation and you do it in the totality of the entire league, that they have one of the more less desirable quarterback situations in this league because they have neither a top 15 quarterback, nor do they have somebody as a prospect who, based on their draft status, suggests that league-wide people thought that this was going to be, or, you know, not, maybe not league-wide, that's not accurate, but somebody who doesn't project as a first-round pick based on where they were selected. And with one start, that's all the data we have on Sam Howell. Check that out, because I think it was a good look at, we talk about these quarterbacks all the time because they're here, but everybody has other quarterbacks, and they talk about their Sam Howells the same way, which is different than saying Sam Howell will not be good. I think he's interesting for sure, but go read that article. Now, the other one, and I'll talk about this one in more depth right now, is the one that dropped today, Sunday morning. It's about the ownership situation, but it's looking at it in a slightly different way. And that way is, it's less right now about if Dan Snyder will sell and more about when that would happen. What, you know, we had talked a lot about how active would Washington be in free agency? How much money would they be willing to spend amid this ownership change? Talked a lot about escrow because of the funding rule and things like that. Did come to find out that the escrow and funding thing wasn't exactly what I was thinking. I mean, I think others in town had the same reaction. And that is basically that the way that rule works, Dan Snyder was not going to have to put up any money up front, that it was going to be the escrow accounts get looked at once a year, and that time had already passed in this calendar year. Okay. But nonetheless, the money part is still interesting. And that's what my article was about, that how signing bonuses that the Commanders are paying their new players in the contracts, there are dates written that lay out all this language, obviously. And the language for Daron Payne, but also Jacoby Brissett, also Andrew Wiley, according to people that have seen these documents, told The Athletic that the date is unusual. What do I mean by that? The standard practice in the NFL is paying these signing bonuses. And I think we're mostly talking about something of note, not necessarily like an undrafted free agent type guy, but even that probably, that bigger signing bonuses within 15 to 30 days of when the contract is official, that money gets sent out. Now, not necessarily the full amount. It is pretty common practice to pay out in installments. The number of installments may differ depending on if you're, say, a cash-rich team like the Cowboys, just to use an example, or a cash-poor team like the Bengals are a little more mom-and-pop-ish, you know? That's a difference. Other than that, everything is pretty standard. You make the first installment payment within 15 to 30 days, and then the rest of it, you know, gets done in a reasonable time. It could be a year or even more, but, you know, there's a process. And if you look at the recent history of some of these deals that the Commanders have done for Terry McLaurin, for Jonathan Allen, even going back to 2016 for Trent Williams, they are within that time frame that I just mentioned. But this year is not. This year, these deals were done around like March 13th, right? This year, the deals are going out 2 months long. So for Daron Payne and others, May 12th is the date. Now, why would they do that? Well, I don't know. I don't know. I don't even know necessarily before I started this project, like, was it truly 15 to 30? Was it, is that a rule? It's not a rule, but it's pretty standard to the point that when I pointed this out to people, they were all like, and I'm talking about, you know, people from around the league who deal with contracts all the time. They were very much confused by this as well. So when I presented the idea that, hey, Dan Snyder, we think is going to be selling the Commanders here, could be pretty soon. Is it possible that pushing back the money to this May 12th date, could that mean something in relation to the sale of this team and when it might happen? Now, again, people couldn't say for sure. But to the degree that they were all surprised to see this, see that date get pushed out that far, is why several of them said that, yes, it certainly looks like a situation. It could be inferred, absolutely, that this is about Dan Snyder delaying payments, essentially, so he's not the one that has to deal with it. Now, I'm not going to say that it's necessarily a nefarious thing in that regard. I'm just saying that it's odd that a year ago with Terry McLaurin, who signed a pretty big deal and got a signing bonus and all that stuff, that his payment was within the 30-day window. It was 28 days. Less than a year later, Daron Payne, his first payment is 2 months out. And the one thing that's different, really, between the two times is that we know that Dan Snyder is exploring the sale of this team. So if it is May 12th, I did not look this up, so apologies for this, but like, it does take some time to announce it's going to happen, to going through the vetting process. I was saying I'm not sure how long the Denver Broncos process was. It's not overnight. I mean, they just got sold last year. It's not overnight or anything. So the way that several of these people interpreted this date, this May 12th date, 2 months out from when these deals were signed, that this could very well be an indication of when Dan Snyder thinks sort of is the drop dead sell by date. And to be clear, I don't mean that's the date something would be announced that he's selling, more of like, that's could be the date. This is an interpretation. This could be the date in which he's putting it out far enough so that when that everything could be wrapped up by then. We'll see. I don't, you know, again, this is somewhat speculation, but I'm talking to people who understand what goes on here, who were familiar with how these things get paid out. By the way, the Bengals are paying Orlando Brown like a $31 million signing bonus within like 2 days of the deal. That was obviously something that his side wanted, and they're getting it done. I'm just saying it's 15 to 30 days, but here's one that's getting done in like 2 or 3 days. So I think it's pretty interesting. I don't know if everybody else does. And like I said, I don't think it's a determinative factor of, oh, or I shouldn't say it's a definite factor in saying this is when Dan Snyder will definitely be done. We'll see. But it certainly feels like we're heading in this direction. And this was a little more evidence that can be interpreted. And people who, again, you know, some notable people in their specific field suggest that to them, factoring in everything that's going on, including the idea that Dan Snyder could be selling and that this owner's meeting is where we may finally get some direct and hard news, that it makes sense to think that. So you can go check out the story. There's more in there. There's some interesting quotes as well. And I also lay out, if you like this inside baseball, I lay out the contracts for Payne and McLaurin and so on. So go check out that on The Athletic. If you're not a subscriber yet, just hit the article and there's a discount code or a discount available there for sure. Now, here's the other thing I just want to mention about this. I assume, you know, there's a lot of younger people here, but a lot of people have seen the movie Independence Day, the Will Smith one, obviously. And I don't know if there's another one, but the Will Smith movie. And when the aliens first show up, this is not a spoiler per se, but when the aliens first show up, they're in these spacecrafts and they're just kind of hovering above. And depending on who you are as a person, you either are very freaked out or you can't wait for your new alien overlords to come in and whatever and take control and you're all in on that. And there were people who were in on that frenzy, the sort of end of days kind of frenzy, and they reflected that in the movie as well. This is how I feel right now with where things are going here with this Commander's sale talk. Like, it's amazing how many people now have sources. I can't believe how many people have sources out there. I see so many people saying they've talked to somebody and, oh, the deal's about done. Oh, get ready. Here it comes. It's going to happen this week, this whatever it may be. I'm not talking about people who, as you know, are like actually on the beat. I'm just talking about all kinds of random sources. And by the way, it's not just about Snyder here. Like the other day, I fielded a question on Twitter about whether Washington was interested in trading for Austin Eckler of the Chargers, a running back, which obviously would make no sense for here. But it got bubbled up on Twitter because it seems like a fake account, as best I could translate it or trace it back, I should say. That some fake account said this and people ran with it. And, you know, it's super bonkers that that's a thing. And with regards to the Snyder thing, again, this is like one of those PSAs I do a couple times a year. Just tread lightly on who you're listening to about any of these things. Matt and I talked about this a bit, so I don't want to step on it too much, but how do I say this? People are not talking about this stuff. Like when we all discuss who they might get at quarterback or what they're looking at in the draft, or there's all kinds of people talking about these things, not necessarily in a direct, this is 100% what they're going to do, but hey, here's what this player is about. Here's what I heard Washington is thinking. Maybe here's exactly what Washington's thinking. Here are their needs. We can have some real context and real thoughts. You think Jeff Bezos is talking to anybody? Now, I'm not saying he's getting the team. I'm just saying if Jeff Bezos involved, you think he's talking to anybody? Hell no. Josh Harris? Hell no. Dan Snyder certainly isn't. So the idea that anybody really knows what's going on, I mean, I've talked to people over in the building or around the league who think, hey, it's definitely happening. And if you made me pick right now, is it happening or is it not happening? I would say it's happening. Like I said at the top, the question now is less about if and more about when. But at the same time, like we all hear stuff. I can't just go online and tell everybody what I think at all times or hear, because that's not how this works. And I can just more or less promise you that I don't think any of us can get like people to definitively tell us what's happening. It's not a thing. So when you see people saying, oh, I've heard this, I've heard that, I have no idea who they're talking to. Maybe they've got the inside access to the Snyders or whatever. That is like eighth hand information, I would venture to bet. I mean, like I said, I've heard many things that if I just threw it out there, you guys are like, oh my God, that's amazing. Or, oh no, it's a disaster. But we have to, we have like, we can't do that. So anyway, nobody's perfect. I'm not saying I am or I have all the information. I'm just saying tread lightly with what's out there, whether it's Austin Eckler or whether it's that Dan Snyder is definitely selling. Now, again, I do feel that we're heading into the home stretch. It does certainly seem like that's going on here. And perhaps this revelation about the date in the contracts being pushed back suggests that as well. Maybe it's not. Maybe the Commanders have some other reasonable explanation for it. Is it by the way, if you're wondering, was this any kind of standard protocol when teams sell? I don't know. I wish I had dug into this to a bit more, but I did talk to somebody who was familiar with sort of what was going on with Denver. They didn't think that that changed anything on that end. And, you know, I've talked to various people and nobody has suggested that as a likely solution. You know, Dan Snyder has become obviously a pretty interesting topic around the league. So, you know, people are willing to discuss it in, you know, versus like, hey, the Commanders need a guard. What should they do? So I don't get the sense that there's anything more than what I'm saying, but we'll see if there's another explanation that somebody can provide. In any event, the good news is it does feel like there's progress towards a Dan Snyder sale. The owners' meeting is next week. It's possible that we may have a resolution any day or by next week. And I still keep wondering, where's the parade? Is the parade happening? Where is it? Is it in Georgetown, like where it did when they won Super Bowls? Is it happening out in Ashburn? Are people going to storm the Dulles Airport runways? Is it going to happen in the FedEx Field parking lot? I don't know, but I can only imagine the excitement if and when this actually happens. And again, it is now more of or less of if and more of when. So take that for what it's worth. I'm just saying, in this case, I understand the desire to hear the news that you want to hear. And I'm not saying at all that it won't happen. I'm just saying the people who are acting like they have the answers, I'm telling you, they don't. It just doesn't seem logical. And I'm not saying I do either, but it does feel like we're heading in the good direction. If you're wanting Dan Snyder out, I should say. We'll give it time. We'll see. All right. Well, we get into, in terms of where free agency is, Matt and I will talk about that. I mean, obviously it's been quiet the last couple of days. They have, as we know, addressed a bunch of their needs. So they're in a good place now. They can be more aggressive either in free agency or the draft. I really don't think they'll be more aggressive in free agency at this point, but we'll see what happens. Let's get to it right now. Here's my conversation with Matt Parris talking ownership and where the Commanders are 1 week into free agency. And then again, if you want to stay on, here's some Georgetown talk about who they're going to hire for their head coach. Hang on for that as well.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
All right, enough of me ranting. Let's bring in one of my colleagues on the beat, Matt Parris from the Washington Times, Matthew_Parris, P-A-R-A-S. Of course, he's also the, although he doesn't actually bring us any food. I was going to say he's like the go-to chef of the Commander's beat. His Instagrams on whenever Top Chef is on is about him cooking food. Yeah, why don't you bring any food in for us during the season? I mean, do you not like us, or what's the problem?
We don't do Friday potlucks anymore.
That's, look, you know the saying, like, you know, if your friends jump off a building, are you gonna do it too? You can be your own trendsetter. You can just say, you know what, I crushed this chicken teriyaki, And I really like you people. I wanted to give you some. There you go. Boom.
So I just show up with like a whole ass thing of pasta and a, hey guys, I know we have to interview Terry McLaurin today, but try my kappa ma that I always make.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can eat it afterwards. We have a refrigerator in the room. I'm just saying.
Sure.
All right. Well, look, you got plenty of time. We're not going to be back out there on any full time basis really until the season starts like that. So, you know, just saying, you got some time. You'll plan your menu accordingly. All right. So here's the plan. Here, I just talked a bunch about the ownership stuff, but I want to get Matt's take on that, and then we'll get to kind of where we are 1 week into free agency and what's next. But let's get to the owner stuff. As we're talking now on Sunday night, I feel like I always try to specify when I'm talking to a guest because, you know, you never know when news will break. And in this particular topic, it is, you know, everything to the minute is going to be important. The key is here, next week is the owners meeting. You know, a week from today, right? We will be in, I was going to say Florida, we'll be in Arizona. Hobnobbing with the people there who are actually hobnobbing, and we're just sort of interloping at the owners meeting. Obviously, Dan Snyder, his future will be a topic one way or the other, whether it's moving towards a sale, whether it's the owners discussing his future, if they're going to take a vote, whatever it is, that will be a big topic. I guess there's been a lot of news and noise and speculation and insane speculation, and people acting like they have sources when no chance they do. Where are you at with sort of where we're at, and what's the, I don't know, like what's your take of the temperature right now, to the degree of like, you know, whatever, just what are you buying? I guess
feels like it's burning, but I don't know if I've just been close to the flame too long. It's one of those that, like, I just don't know if it's actually happening or not, but it does seem like there is incremental progress, if not outright progress. It's just, you know, for me, it's when's it gonna happen, who's it gonna be, you know, there's just so much up in the air right now, but it is interesting to monitor.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think the, you know, first of all, the owners meeting, this one, the one that's coming up, has long been established as the mile marker for when we may finally get some news, some clarification, some sense of really where this is headed. So again, for all the people running around saying something's close, well, no shit. I mean, this has been the whole point the whole time. I mean, that this is happening now. It's not like this is like out of the blue. So the question, oh, go ahead.
Oh no, just to jump in there real quick, is that's long been the target date, but my assumption kind of was that, you know, they would announce it leading up to the owners meeting, so when it was time to vote, they'd have an idea of who they were voting on now. You know, they know who Jeff Bezos is. They're familiar with Josh Harris because of the Broncos stuff. So it could be, if it is announced this week, I think that's ample lead up time. But yeah, this has always been a target date, as you kind of referenced.
Right. And you know, to that end, like, let's just say it's Josh Harris. They already went through with, right? I mean, they already were at least aware of him with because he was one of the people involved with the Broncos. So to whatever degree he got through the vetting process, you know, there's already something there to look at. You know, Jeff Bezos, you know, imagine they have a decent thought on that as well. But yeah, right. I don't know the exact what it would take, what's the due diligence they need to do. You have to do it. I think I heard Mike Florio the other day on with Grant and Danny, and he said the only other time he could think of that an owner didn't get approved was ironically this one, when it was Howard Milstein as the lead and Dan Snyder as in the role of Fred Smith and Dwight Schar and et cetera. And that group got turned down, and then they salvaged it by Dan Snyder putting together a group. So ironic on that front. But yeah, I mean, I would just say it does seem like we're heading in that direction. Again, I think it's been heading in that direction. Like, it didn't just happen. It's been going in this direction for a while. I think the thing that's confusing, I would imagine, for a lot of people is that it's one thing for us to be talking about what player the Commanders might be interested in free agency and just talking over and over again about, well, I think it makes sense for them to get this guy or they could do that guy. But here, we're not talking about it as much as people would, as much as like we're all hearing stuff. in part because you have to have a sense of what you're talking about. And here's the thing. Nobody has a effing clue. I promise you that. Because you know who's not talking? The people who, all the money people. Right. We don't even know if Jeff Bezos is bidding.
Right.
So, go ahead.
My question to you is like, to try, I've written articles kind of looking at who each bidder would be, but kind of looking through their sports lens, do you think it's fair to, if Josh Harris buys the team, or even Tillman Vertitta, like, is it fair to look at the 76ers or the Rockets to see how they would run as sports teams, or the NBA is completely different? We shouldn't judge that based on how he might run an NFL team.
Well, it's a good question. I mean, look, I think this is, we have a good example locally, right? People think Ted Leonsis does a really good job running the Capitals. He does the exact same job he does running the Wizards. The only difference is that when they had the number one pick, they had they ended up getting one of the 10 best players of all time. And the Wizards, John Wall is a very good player and an all-star, but he wasn't that. That's the difference. But if you look at their composite situation, you think, oh, well, Ted Leonsis, whoever this guy is that owns the hockey team, is awesome. And the guy who owns the Wizards is terrible. I think it's much closer to being in the middle. So to your point is, I think it's probably somewhat comparable. I mean, ultimately, just like in the NBA, if you don't have a star player, kind of hard to win. In the NFL, if you don't have a quarterback, it's kind of hard to win. I did see on Twitter earlier, just randomly, somebody posted a screenshot of the 76ers year-by-year record with Josh Harris as the owner, and whoever this person was saying, look how terrible this is.
Well, they tanked.
Right, ignoring the fact that they had the most, like the fact that we call this thing tanking, which is really more or less just rebuilding, but the negative of tanking is because of that situation. And I know they haven't won a title, and I know they haven't made the finals. They ended up with one of the three or four best players in the NBA currently, and or every year has it have a chance to get there. We'll see if they do this year or not, but like they are largely succeeded in this model. Because you can't, nobody wins a title. You can't have, multiple people can't win a title every year. You know what I'm saying?
Right. So, I mean, if these guys were the equivalent of the Sixers for the NFL, they'd be a lot of fun.
Right. Exactly. I mean, yeah. So, and look, I mean, to be fair, I don't know. Like I've heard with Josh Harris, it's sort of more of like a neutral that I've heard. Like I've heard some good things, but I don't know. Like personally, as somebody who was into the process, I admire the fact that that ownership allowed that to happen. Well, I mean, look, it was a bit extreme, and I'm sure if a 76ers fans are like, oh my Lord, after the third year of that, you got to be, wanting to, murder yourself. And, who knows if they, obviously Ben Simmons didn't work out like, to a degree. I guess they traded him for Harden, but he didn't work out as a thing. And, the Markelle Fultz, Jason Tatum trade blew up in their face, stuff like that. So, you never know, but whereas Tillman Fertitta, talking to people who still cover the league, that one feels more dicier if we're comparing what they do over there with what they might do here. Look, ultimately, right? Is it just going to come? I mean, look at a guy like Robert Kraft. Is Robert Kraft viewed as a great owner? Yes. Why? Well, ultimately hired Bill Belichick and they drafted Tom Brady. I mean, it's just like anything. You have to hire the right people. And the question is, what does that mean? Right here, the right people often have meant people that either were a big name that like Dan Snyder threw money at, but really it didn't make sense. Or people are, again, to talk about like with the Wizards, the ownership sets the tone. And the baseline, here's what we're looking to do, and the people underneath it have to execute it. But if the parameters are such that you can't exactly do all the things we as on the outside say they should do, well, then there's only so much you can do. So the owner sets the tone, and none of us will know what that means until they actually start doing it.
Right. I mean, to stick with Leonsis as an example, though, like I do think there are some similarities with how he runs the Wizards and how he runs the Caps in terms of sticking with management. Like, both he's pretty loyal. He's been very loyal to Brian McKellen, George McPhee before that, Tommy Shepard now, Ernie Grunfeld before that. So, there are a little bit of similarities. Even if you kind of look at what the Caps did at the trade deadline, it felt a little wizardy, that they sold off some pieces, but They didn't necessarily blow it up from this core. They're going to try and make a run next year. We can argue whether that's smart or not, but you know, this isn't a hockey podcast. But you know, I think it's interesting in that, like, you know, you look at Josh Harris, what he's done with the 76ers. They've made a lot of aggressive hires, bringing in Daryl Morey, getting Doc Rivers, listening to, you know, Adam Silver when they hired the Colangelos. You know, that was apparently a league-oriented move. So, you know, it's just interesting to see kind of the hiring patterns and whether that would apply to the NFL and what does it mean?
Yeah, no, I think I can't remember if I've said this on the podcast, but I've said this before to others. You know, obviously a lot of people want Dan Snyder to go. It's not breaking news. I would say for us on the beat, we're all just sort of like, you know, just like you guys, we're all in this holding pattern. But obviously for us, it's a little bit different because, you know, if right now it comes news, something's going to happen, you guys can, you know, go dance in the streets and we have to go start working. And it's a constant churn of trying to find work. Again, no complaining. That's just the deal. Crap. What was I just saying? My brain doesn't work anymore. This is what I'm talking about, people. Don't become a sports writer covering this team.
Well, I will note, last time we recorded, we talked about Heinicke and what might happen there, and then he signed, I think, by the time the podcast was out. So if our timing of recording is any coincidence, then maybe a new owner tomorrow.
Oh, well, there's there's certainly that possible. I don't know. If I come back to what I was saying, I'll circle back. it was a good thought, whatever it was. All right. All that said, you know, it does feel like, you know, there's momentum, obviously. And we'll see how this goes. Oh, I know what I was going to say. That for us on the beat, Dan Snyder selling the team, if that announcement comes today, tomorrow, that does not end our story, because now we have to figure out who this new person is and what does it mean for that person coming in for everything, for what we're talking about here. What's the direction of the team? What does it mean for Ron Rivera? What does it mean for Jason Wright? What is, you know, anything? What does it mean? Also, of course, you know, what does it mean for the stadium? You know, I don't know, team names. I don't really worry about this as much as others, but all the different things come into play for sure. And, you know, that's going to be a big part of the story at some point here. But right now, the story is Dan Snyder possibly getting out of here. And I guess here's the thing. Like, here's a good example as to when I tell you that when people are out there saying they know what's going on, they have no idea. I still, to this minute, am not prepared to say, Matt, he's gone. I mean, I've had several people tell me he's gone. I've had people who in theory would know that he's gone. I have written stories that suggest, well, here's some, you know, the thing I had yesterday, here's a date that might indicate something, but it is not the nature of the person who has the jobs we have to run around and say, I can tell you 100% it's over until I know 100% it's over. So okay. I believe it is heading in that direction. Even in my story yesterday, I wrote that the question that's being asked more is not if, but when. And I think that is accurate, but at the same point, we'll see how it goes. I guess at this point, is there anything that sort of, I don't know, you're looking at to get a gauge of what may be going down? Any kind of you're looking at the flags on the goalpost to see which way the wind's blowing? I don't know, anything along those lines?
No, just kind of, you know, staying up to date with it, monitoring, ready to. Carrying my laptop with me in case something breaks and I need to write at a gas station or whatever.
Is that, or have we reached that stage where you're carrying the laptop with you everywhere?
Sort of. I didn't bring it to – I saw Creed 3 today, and I did not bring it to Creed. But
the fact that you went to a movie theater, even in itself, because, like, not – I mean, I don't know what theater you're at, but not every theater gets – good cell reception, obviously.
Oh yeah, no, that would have been a no-go. I got fine service there.
Okay, yeah, because I, for me, like, at this point, I may not take my laptop everywhere, but I'm not going as best I can, not going anywhere where I won't have signal.
When the Commanders traded for Carson Wentz, I was in the Batman. I was trying to squeeze a day off for free agency, and they traded for Wentz, and I booked it the hell out of there. I was only like an hour in, and I was like, all right, they gave me a refund, so
Oh, wow. What? How did you get that? What did you tell them?
I was just like, I have a work emergency. Can I go? But can I get... And they gave it to me, and I went and saw it when things cooled down.
You should have looked to see if they were a Commanders fan. You might have been able to get you know, a second movie, especially, you know, depending on what you're telling them.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. You know, my phone just made noises, and I felt like I needed to look. I was with somebody today, and I was incredibly rude, constantly looking at my phone every time I made a noise, because we're, you know, I always get the DEF CONs confused. DEF CON 1 is the worst.
I think so.
Yeah, I always get that confused. Well, whatever, we're inching up closer to the top of that line. All right, so we're kind of rambling on here, I guess. I guess, you know, I don't want to make a prediction about this, but like I said, it does feel like something is happening here. You know, the May 12th date that was in the various player contracts of when their bonuses got pushed out. I have no idea if that's that's not a suggestion that may mean nothing. This was like asking people, here's some information. What do you make of it? B, May 12th, to me would be more like it's already happened, like pushing it back far enough such that if things were delayed for whatever the reason, you know, I don't, you know, we don't even know definitively, like, it's about not paying out some of the money. My only point is, like, I've been saying for a while, I think it's going to be past the owners meetings, but before May. So I feel like we're heading in that direction at least. And, right. You know, we'll see from there. I feel like I'm like rambling here to a degree, but like I said, this is to the point of, anybody who's acting like they know definitively what's happening, I don't know what to tell you.
Well, two things. One, it wouldn't be a podcast without rambling, so you got that down. And then two, May 12th, you know, just complete speculation, but if they reach an agreement by next week, there's going to be a period of time where everything changes hands. You know, that in itself takes a couple months. I believe David Tepper, you know, he was approved at those at what, March, May, somewhere around there, and then he didn't take over officially until the fall. So there is a bit of a time process. Maybe once that actually gets finalized, that's worth maybe digging into to see when other owners officially were out of the building. But that process in itself takes a little bit of time.
It does. So, all right. So look, I mean, again, if you want to, you know, start figuring out your party plans, if you're inclined to celebrate whenever this happens and you want to start getting ready, go ahead. But, you know, no promises it's going to happen this week or next week. If other people want to claim that and they have sources to say that, and they're, you know, great for them. All right, let's get to the football side of things. We're a week into this. Washington has obviously made a bunch of moves. I'm not even going to count sort of the Daron Payne thing, because that's keeping your own guys different than bringing in other people. They have addressed their needs at offensive line. They have a linebacker to replace Cole Holcomb. They added a little corner depth, but that's still kind of a bit of a gaping hole, I would say. That's kind of it, right? I mean, they added a wide receiver from the Chiefs just for some more depth. They signed a defensive tackle the other day who I'm kind of guess is more of a training camp body than he is like a real shot to make the roster. But, you know, things happen. I still don't know if I think they're – oh, and, of course, Jacoby Brissett. Sorry, let me not bury that lead. I still don't know if I think – if I know that they're any better. Like, I think Jacoby Brissett is better than the quarterbacks they had last year. But in totality – and I don't think you can have – if you have a definitive answer, go ahead. But, like – I think we're gonna have to wait, but like it's nothing. I don't know that like they haven't made such a move that I'm like, wow, they're definitely going to get, they're definitely better this year. Doesn't mean they're worse. They might have like solidified their stuff to the point that they can let their pieces they already have shine more, but I don't know if I'm looking at this going, wow, they have like crushed this, even though they've addressed needs.
I would agree. I think the way that they possibly view it, not necessarily that I agree with this, but I think they view it as they're a team that's close to competing. They finished 8-8-1 last year, so at 500, they already expected to take a leap in year three. That didn't necessarily happen. They felt they were a little short, And so if they look at the areas that they fell short in, if they could just get marginally better, then this would be a pretty good team. And you look at what they did at the offensive line. I don't know how substantially better it makes them, but you know, you could argue that it made them a little bit better or marginally better, you know, with Andrew Wiley. If they get the right side of the line figured out, depends what happens at center. You know, I could see this team being better. But yeah, I agree with you that there's no really splash move. There's really no one place you could argue they got better, except for maybe quarterback, depending on how you feel about Sam Howell or Jacoby Brissett.
Right. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Andrew Wiley's way better than some of the offensive line they had last year. But the real issue of the offensive line was mostly the injuries. Like, they were better as the year went on, but whatever. I'm not saying the line was good. I'm just saying it was mostly injuries, and like Trey Turner and Andrew Norwell just didn't quite work. But Cosme was hurt. Other than Leno, everybody basically got hurt at some point.
I think they were banking on Norwell and Turner playing a lot better than they were at their respective stages of the career, and it hurt them in the long run.
Oh, 100%. But that's what I'm saying. Like, right now, you know, I mean, if Andrew Wiley was so coveted around the league, he would have gotten a lot more money than he did. Which, again, he might be fine. And this, it's sort of similar to the quarterback story that I wrote the other day. They can have a situation that looks not that exciting and be better than they were last year. Yeah. And that may be the case of where they're at. Like, again, I'm not trying to knock it. I would be silly of me to say Andrew Norwell, Nick Gates, those are bad moves.
Yeah.
I mean Andrew Wiley, sorry. I mean, I've read stuff. I've talked to people. Seem reasonable for sure, but that's different than saying that they're miles better than they were last year. That's all I'm saying.
They wanted to get younger on the offensive line, and Wiley and Nick Gates are younger than Turner and Andrew Norwell. So, you know, that might not be much, but again, it goes back to how much do they think they need to improve. If they don't think they need to improve that much and only on the margins, well, you know, 27 is younger than 31.
Right. And here's an example where, like, making some of these moves could enhance already what's there, right? So here's the perfect example, I think, is Pro Football Focus has a stat, turnover-worthy passes. Right. This is the stat you don't want to be first in.
I know who was first.
So Taylor Heinicke was first last year, and I think Carson Wentz was, like, fifth or sixth. Jacoby Brissett was 22nd. When I talked to people about him, like, one of the constant mentions was he's careful with the ball. He keeps, you know, controls the ball. He's not putting it into harm's way. He's not making a lot of turnovers. Okay, well, just logically, right? If you can avoid, if you lower your turnovers, if you can make more efficient plays, when you have Terry McLaurin and Brian Robinson and Antonio Gibson and others, you have a defense that last year was, you know, top 10 more or less overall in various metrics. That might be enough to win two more games. I mean, you know, I also think Jacoby Brissett's going to make this thing less chaotic. Whether it was Wentz or Heinicke, it was always like, oh God, what's going to happen on this play? It was not a lot of normalcy happening throughout. So I think Brissett can make things a little more solid. And, you know, relative at least to Heinicke and Wentz, he has, he's got a higher floor than those guys. Maybe his ceiling is not as high as Wentz, but obviously Wentz had so many other concerns, it didn't even really matter. So I think Brissett could make a significant difference here. Now, that's assuming he even plays, because obviously Sam Howell is still the lead there. So let me ask you this. For 2 months, Ron Rivera's run around talking about Sam Howell is going to be given the chance to win this job. He'll be QB1 going into the summer. It's easy to say these things in January and February. What about when you get to August and there is a new owner and the new owner's like, well, hold on, Ron, great to meet you. Let me see here. Oh, 22, 27 and one, no winning records in 3 years. So what's going on? How's it going? Oh, wait, you're going to go with Sam Howell, a fifth round pick with one career start. Okay. Well, all I can say is I hope you win, because I can't, you know, who knows what's going to happen. And by the way, forget Ron, Eric Bieniemy. He's still trying to get a head coaching job. If everybody gets blown out after this year, I'm not saying that will happen or that he would, but like if it does, then whatever happens this year is his resume more, you know, is he going to go with the guy with one start, or is he going to go and say, well, hold on. That guy's not bad, Jacoby Brissett. 48 career starts. He's had some good success. Why are we taking the risk? So where are you at with that right now? The idea of this Sam Howell is going to be the guy versus that, okay, well, now we know who the other competition is. It's a little bit harder to say that.
Well, I don't necessarily know how much that applies necessarily through training camp versus if Howell struggles at the beginning of the season, right? It's easy to imagine a scenario that Sam Howell starts the first two games, struggles, and then gets a quick hook, something like that, because you have Brissett as the fallback option. But, you know, there's a lot in Sam Howell's game that I could see why coaches get enticed by. He has a strong arm. He can move outside the pocket and create plays. You know, there's this thing with football players, the untapped potential that, or even I can fix him, you know, that's what they fell in a trap with Carson Wentz, that, you know, they were tantalized by the arm and everything there. So, you know, I think they're going to let Howell, you know, see what he can do. And if his mistakes bury him, then his mistakes bury him. But, you know, just because they signed Brissett doesn't make me automatically think he's going to play right away. I think Howell's going to still be given a lot of opportunity to try and win this job.
Okay, well, let's play this out a little bit. The whole point of going with a guy like Sam Howell is you're aiming for the upside, right? But realistically, you know, any rookie quarterback is going to have significant ups and downs. We don't know if they're necessarily going to come in the first 4 weeks or in the middle or the end or whatever, but like they're going to come. Washington, under Ron Rivera, has started 1-4, 2-3, and 1-4. If they have one of those kind of records again with Sam Howell, it doesn't, I mean, unless Sam Howell is like in the rookie of the year conversation, despite whatever the record is, they're going to have to go to Jacoby Brissett. And yeah. Jacoby Brissett has not shown in his career that he's a quarterback who's just going to turn things around. Like, I mean, look, Taylor Heineke, they obviously continually got under a hot streak once he sort of came in, but you know, eventually things peter out. I guess what I'm saying is, like, if Sam Howell, if the whole point of going with Sam Howell is you think there's potential, can you really pull him after four games if you're losing? On the flip side, if you go the other way and go with Brissett, well, then, like, you're automatically cutting down the ceiling. Yeah. So that's why I don't know. I'm not saying I have no opinion on this, but it's like, I think it's more interesting than, not saying you, but just, you know, I think it's an interesting decision as to, like, has Rivera talked himself into a corner? Can he really have a competition? If he pulls Howell in four games, hypothetically, what does that say about the future? Like, I would say, to me, I would be surprised if by the time we get to training camp, there's not a little bit of backtracking going on. Because that's a lot of risk to take at that point.
Well, I could see him backtracking only because Rivera loves to harp on competition, 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 even if there's not necessarily competition unfolding right in front of our faces. I'll be more interested to see how they actually split up the reps because, you know, quarterbacks are different than other positions, but when there's actually been a true competition in camp under Rivera, it's not necessarily with, like, right guard last year before Trey Turner got hurt and missed a bunch of times. It's not like Trey Turner took one series with the ones, and then the next series when the ones are out there, Wes Schweitzer was there. It was Trey Turner took four, and then Schweitzer got two. You know, it wasn't – you weren't rotating all the time. And so I'm just kind of curious to see if there is an actual competition, how does he divide up the reps and how many – reps with the ones that Howell get versus Brissett.
Yeah. And, you know, again, to be clear, I'm intrigued by Sam Howell. I think there's something there. And if this was a normal circumstance, I mean, they're too good to say, well, let's go the Josh Harris, Sam Hinkie route and sort of bottom out, take the shot at Howell, let him ride it out. If it doesn't work, you're in position next year, maybe to get a Caleb Williams, or at least to be in the top 10 and whatever, but they're too good for that. And obviously Rivera's, that's just not his MO. So they're not gonna do that. I don't know. I think it's an interesting decision. Let me ask you this. I wrote the other day that again, despite the fact that I think they've improved at quarterback, still one of the least desirable situations in the league, primarily because of the two categories, the veteran and the rookie. Howell and Brissett would both rank towards the bottom of both. Howell, I get it. Everybody wants to say he's look out. There were 21 different quarterbacks who were picked higher than 144 in the 3 years since Rivera has been here, including a bunch of first round picks. So the idea of suggesting that Sam Howell is automatically going to be, or even like has a strong chance to be something, is just not realistic. At this different thing, he won't. 20 teams in the league have some version of this. We just focus because he's the guy here. But simultaneously, Brissett is, by all the view of the league, is he is that spot starter backup guy. So yeah. Do you buy that? Do you buy that sense that, like, yeah, they might be better, but it's still, when you look at it in totality, it's still dicey?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it kind of reminds me of 2019. I think this is a little bit better of a situation than 2019, but we saw how quickly things could get off the rail that year. You know, Case Keenum, he was a guy that had some experience, some playoff track record, but he started here and was pretty bad pretty quickly. Dwayne Haskins wasn't ready and never really kind of panned out the way you wanted to his rookie year. And Jay Gruden got fired after 5 games. So, you know, even though you think you improved at the quarterback position, you know, things can go south pretty fast and be worse than you expected. But again, I think 2019 is more of that's the worst case scenario.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think that one, it was basically the writing was on the wall, and obviously,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, it seemed pretty apparent that Gruden was going to be in trouble, barring the unforeseen. Now, by the way, Washington could start off well this year, and if they do that, regardless of which quarterback's in there, that'll be great. It's just they haven't. You know, like, anybody who wants to say that they will, okay. I mean, based on what? That, you know, that's my, I mean, they were 2-2 in 2021 when they, you know, they had that miracle win against the Giants after Dustin Hopkins misses a kick, but they call was offsides on the Giants. Got to redo and made it. That was their high watermark of the first 5 weeks in any of the seasons. Was that somewhat lucky win? Anything else? The open floor to you. You're the point guard here. What else is interesting for you? Player on the field, off the field, stadium, the name, the draft. Whatever it is, what's in that mind of yours right now?
I do wonder how, after the draft, if we feel like they haven't made a major improvement, depending on how their draft goes. Maybe their major improvement will come through this draft, and if they draft well, you know, this. I can't. Do you think this regime has drafted well overall?
I'm going to ignore the people who I can hear saying, well, they took Chase Young over Justin Herbert. We don't have to relitigate that. Yeah. Putting that aside, I mean, like, you know, quality
picks and...
yeah, I mean, I think they've done a reasonable job. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's sort of hard with the last year's class. You know, I mean, we just don't know enough. I mean, Jahan Dotson looked really good, but it's only been 1 year. Mathis didn't play. You know, Sam Howell, we're going to see what's going to happen with him. But, you know, I think they, you know, Brian Robinson was a pretty good pick. You know, Gibson was a pretty good pick in 2020. You know, I mean, I think they've done reasonable. Yeah. I just think, you know. Yeah, I think they've done fine.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I mean, I think the 2020 draft was pretty strong, finding Cam Curl and Gibson and then Young and 21. 21 is interesting because if you would have asked me after the first year, I would have said the only player maybe in here are Sam Cosmi and St. Juice. And then now it's, you know, you have question marks about those guys. And Jamin Davis looked a lot better than he does and everything there. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see. I thought last year's draft was pretty strong just based on you know, trading back from 11 to 16 and getting everything you did there, it was a, that was, you could argue that was their best single draft moment in their 3 years here.
My, I'm calling my shot. Now this is of course,
right,
preposterous to say, wait out, but like they're going to do it again. That, right. that's my calling the shot. They're going to drop down from 16. And it would, honestly, it would make sense to do it just simply because if they're not a team that's going to be spent, I mean, they've already gone through a week of free agency. And like we said, they really haven't spent a ton, which I'm not saying you have to, but they haven't made a big splashy play. By the way, like in terms of like trying to figure out if they've gotten better, you have to look at the division, the division, you know, just today, Dallas acquired wide receiver Brandon Cooks for a couple of late round picks. He makes money. So that's where that comes into play. He's a good player. They also traded for Stephon Gilmore. The Eagles, not so much they added outside people, but they've kept more of their guys than I would have probably thought they would have early on. And the Giants, I'm blanking here. They got Darren Waller, who's a pretty interesting player if he's healthy, but he just hasn't been healthy. Obviously, they kept Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley. What am I missing here? Did they
brought back Darius Slayton, who kind of always liked. Besides that, have they done anything on defense?
I'm blanking here. I'll try to look it up. But I guess I'm saying it's not just enough to say that Washington has done some decent things. Well, so is everybody in the division. And by the way, you know, look, I don't think the NFC East will be as good as it was last year, if for no other reason because of the schedule. Instead of playing the AFC South, they're going to play the AFC East. And if Aaron Rodgers goes to the Jets, I mean, the worst team is Bill Belichick's team, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I think the Jets will be pretty good, but then again, it'll be close to 40. And this team has always been like pretty competitive against Aaron Rodgers. Even in 2019 when they were terrible, that was like a very close game.
Sure. But I'm just saying like playing the Bills, the Dolphins, the Jets, and the Patriots versus last year when, you know, that division was not very good. I'm saying in and of itself, that's going to be a
For sure.
An issue for sure. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I was trying to see if I had a special guest coming in to join us randomly, but I don't know if that's going to happen here, but we'll see. Maybe I'll give it another minute or two. I guess just so in terms of this week, I'm not anticipating a ton else for this team in terms of free agency right now. Like, you know, even after they signed Cody Barton, everyone's like, gotta get a linebacker. I'm like, they're not getting a linebacker, you know, at least of note. They're not paying anybody more than they just paid that guy. Go ahead. What?
Oh, the thing I think that is maybe interesting to watch this week to see if it happens or not is Cam Sims. What's up with him? That's relatively low stakes, but they've re-signed kind of all their other guys that you would kind of think that they would want to re-sign besides him. And there were some talks of, you know, them checking in, but what is Cam Sims' market like?
Yeah, I mean, they, they've checked in from what I was told, but, you know, I guess, I don't imagine Cam Sims has some sort of dynamic market, but you also already know what it is here, right? They view him as a special teams guy only, essentially.
But if you told me, like, they signed him this week or whatever, that's the type of move that, if they were to make a type of move, that would be it. You know, I don't think they're going to sign another linebacker or running back or anything else.
Right. I mean, yeah, they could use another linebacker. They could use the JD McKissick replacement, but you know, you also have the draft for these things as well. All right. Well, look, you've said it all. You're not a Howard Stern guy, are you?
No.
That's how he always ends the interviews. You've said it all. All right, and I teased earlier we might have a special mystery guest. For people who are only into the Commanders, this won't help your cause too much, but he is, you know, as somebody who grew up here, he feels your pain. No, we're going to talk quickly about Georgetown basketball. You know, I know everybody's waiting in town to see who the next owner of the Commanders will be. My guy Bobby Bancroft here, who covers Georgetown for the AP and SB Nation, he is focused all on what's going to happen with Georgetown basketball. Ed Cooley. It feels like that's where we're just waiting for somebody to tell us Ed Cooley has signed a contract. Is that where we're at?
It does seem to be where we're at, and he's sort of he's really putting some information out there that you don't hear from a lot of coaches, and how hard it is for him to make this decision. I sort of half expect him to have an Instagram post the next couple of days about what he's deciding to do.
Well, you know what he needs to do? He needs to put up a picture with multiple hats. A Providence hat, a Georgetown hat, and he just picks one.
Or a notes app apology for leaving Providence.
Sure, whatever it is.
But may I interest you in Dave Leto, Bobby?
I think if Georgetown were going to go that route, they should just bring JT3 back, something that DePaul did. And
oh, yeah, that's...
JT actually had some success at Georgetown, so I think that would be just fine. You know, I think from a Commander's standpoint, I think there's a lot of similarities with, you know, for years, Dan Snyder seems to be this problem, and whoever they get doesn't really matter. The way Georgetown's handling their coaching search, their school president, who's more involved than other school presidents, seems to be a big issue over there.
Well, I told you this earlier offline. If we don't hear, if they just hire Ed Cooley and we didn't hear, by the way, they also interviewed, you know, Mike Jones, the former DeMatha coach who's at Virginia Tech now, or Tommy Amaker or whoever, what are we doing? You're just going to hire the one guy? Like, I get it. Ed Cooley's obviously been pretty good, but shouldn't you be exploring other things? Otherwise, it's just back to this generally sort of tunnel vision situation. And again, Ed Cooley's a totally good coach, but as Bobby and I have discussed, he's about as close as you can get to being part of the Thompsons without blood being involved.
If they did a national wide search like they claimed they were going to do, it seems to be a national or a nationwide search that who knows John Thompson Jr. the best. And the answer was Ed Cooley. And that's what they came up with.
Right now. All right. Now this is why it's perfect to have Matt here. Cause Matt is, of course, that people know is a proud DePaul alum. So he's a Big East guy. Ed Cooley, like, totally good coach, right? I mean, no argument there. Pops out, you know, 20 win seasons pretty regularly. Providence gets in the tournament a lot. It's a tough place to win because there's just not a lot up there in that part of the country in terms of, you know, local recruiting and their, you know, from a facilities and just program perspective. Georgetown's definitely spent way more, I'm sure. I don't know the number, but gotta be way more, all that stuff. But he also has not had that signature moment in the tournament. They haven't had a year where they went, right? I mean, they made the Sweet 16 one time, Bobby? Is that what you told me earlier?
Last year, they were a 4 seed, and they did get to the second weekend, yes.
Okay, so it's not like that. So, like, Matt, like, when you're looking at it, like, you know, you got to get players and all that, but, like, you look like, wow, Ed Cooley to Georgetown, look at, or like, eh, all right, I don't know, we'll see.
I don't, I mean, I think it would be a fine hire. I think the dangerous danger with this coaching cycle for them is they need to nail it because they're, you know, they still have the prestige of being Georgetown historic. Like, DePaul's problem is they weren't, you know, the 70s and 80s when they were relevant is too far now. And Georgetown has at least had more success than DePaul has. But, you know, if you don't nail this, then you're in danger of becoming a DePaul, and you know you're in a great city, but you can't get local recruits. All the problems that you know that DePaul has, and seeing watching their program kind of fade to obscurity. That's kind of where you think. But I think Ed Cooley is a good coach. I just don't know how much he restores the program's sexiness, for the lack of a better word.
All right, now who would restore the program sexiness? Is Rick Pitino. I just can't imagine Georgetown's going to even remotely consider it. I mean, obviously, they haven't to this point, as far as we know. Bobby, though, like, there used to be these commercials, what would you do for a Klondike bar? So what would you do if they just interviewed Rick Pitino? Forget hire him. Just interview him. What would you commit to do just for that to happen?
I might sign up to work some Nats games this year.
People need to understand working Nats games. If you're a stringer for the Associated Press, it's a long day and your salary per hour is something you should not calculate, but go ahead.
just today you saw on Twitter, when you've got young kids, you try and find ways to occupy them, kind of just get the day by. We were sort of near the Beltway and I said, hey, let's just drive down to Georgetown. Like, Maybe we'll see Ed Cooley walk out of the Thompson Center. Maybe we'll see Ronnie Thompson walking around. Can I ask you guys a question?
Sure.
So obviously Providence is a different market than DC. You guys are both with, you know, very mainstream media, you know, Washington Times, The Athletic, obviously not a print edition, but it's, you know, nationwide, big deal. Providence and Ed Cooley are getting ridiculous coverage up there. The coverage in DC is basically, I don't know, what we're recording right now, my podcast, message boards. I mean, that's crazy, right?
It is and it isn't. This is the problem with Georgetown, to the point that Matt was making before. Like, I don't have any idea, Matt, what DePaul's coverage is like, but obviously it's just like here. It's a big city with a bunch of different teams. And, you know, if you're not winning, it's kind of hard to get going. Plus, in that place, like, am I right? Like, DePaul would be to Georgetown what Maryland is to Illinois. Like, the bigger state school is just going to dominate more.
The thing is, Maryland is so much closer here that Illinois, it's still. But, I mean, the Tribune had an Illinois person, Shannon Ryan, who's at The Athletic now. She was the longtime Illinois beat writer, whereas if DePaul did well, was doing well, or had a fun story, they would send out a writer every once in a while. I mean, I can count, like, there were a handful of games a Tribune writer was there sometimes. I mean, there wasn't much.
Yeah, I mean, again, we were talking about this before with Bobby. You were telling me that, and I'm not knocking on the Washington Post for this, but, like, they have historically had a beat reporter covering Georgetown, went on the road with them. That's been peeled back a lot over the last few years. Now it's to the point you're telling me they don't send anybody, and they haven't written, as far as you told me, a single story since Ewing's been fired, saying just here's 10 names of people they could hire. Like, they haven't even done that. This is to your point of nobody's really paying any attention locally. And it says something about where the program is. And I think it says something about where college basketball is.
Well, and it is interesting to see that the New York Post covers the heck out of St. John's, and, you know, they're running, you know, Pitino stories left and right. And I'm not saying that the Post or the Times need to do that, but maybe just, like, one story of, like, here's five possible names that might be in the mix for this job. You know, from, you know, you guys from covering every sport over the years for different outlets. Well, particularly Ben, as he bounced around, you know, Georgetown kind of, they had the legit coverage, like, literally Liz Clark going all around the world to cover Georgetown, to then, you know, scaling back the coverage to where it was just the home games. And then it was kind of like you're getting a lot of stringers to fill in for the home games. This year, they treated them kind of like they used to treat George Mason and GW in the past, where there's literally people there that could write a game story, and the Post chose just to say, yeah, we don't really care.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, I'll take it from first. You know, my main beat is the Commanders, but because the Washington Times is a smaller section, I have to bounce everywhere. And I went to one Georgetown game this year. And
that's right.
I've been at the Times 6 years. I've probably written 3 or 4 Georgetown stories my whole time there. And we have another person who does, or we used to have another person that did. I would say in 6 years there on staff bylines from Georgetown, less than 20.
And this has been the worst run they've ever had. So that your time coincides with literally, like, the bottom completely falling out.
Oh yeah. I mean, they've been irrelevant, not to be rude.
Yeah. And same thing with The Athletic. I mean, like, we've not had a permanent Georgetown writer. When I was hired, I was hired to be the Commanders writer, but because I am who I am, I kept focusing on Georgetown and the Wizards, because that's what I've been doing for a long time. But, you know, there's only so much you can do. And we do have college basketball people that cover the sport. Eamon Brennan, one of our national writers, is here. He has covered Georgetown, but I imagine he didn't go out there much, if at all, this year for the same reasons we're talking about. It's just, there's not much to deal with. Anyway, look, if Ed Cooley shows up, it will be a better day for Georgetown. They will have a coach who's done it, who's proven he can win. Now, can he win big? I guess that's not the big real question in year one and two, but beyond that, we'll have to see. Look, I hope they just hire someone for Bobby, for the same reason I hope this ownership gets done for me and Matt. Just enough. You know, I mean, you've only been dealing with this thing for a couple of days in terms of the actual knowing you have to get a new coach, but you know, it's been apparent for a while. So
going to those games physically the last 2 years, obviously, you know, it's, you know, at the end of the day, you're covering a sport, you're talking to, you know, college athletes, you know, successful head coaches, but going there has been ridiculously difficult.
Yeah, I can imagine. All right, look, you've said it all. That's my new sign off. I'm stealing from Howard Stern, but not really. Don't tell him. All right, Bobby, great job coming in off the bench to deliver some instant offense. I'm going to say Georgetown beat DePaul in this conversation for what it's worth.
True to real life.
That way, who won this year?
Oh, fucking DePaul lost. They were the team that ended Georgetown's losing streak.
Oh, right. Still well, how about that? All right. If you want to follow Bobby, stay up to date on Georgetown at Bobby Bancroft on Twitter. And again, it's at Matthew_Paris on Twitter as well. I'm at Ben Standig. Thanks to everyone for checking out the podcast. Obviously, stay with us, you know, all the time, but obviously we'll have a lot going on. I will be at the owners meeting next week, or really starting next weekend, and we'll be updating the podcast and The Athletic throughout. Until next time, see ya.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.